Afternoon. We apologize for our being late today and moving forward. We're really just trying to understand a new asset class that we were getting involved with earlier. It took us a little time.
Ilya, you all right? Okay, you look like jet lag got a hold of you or something.
Well, I think it's been more like chair leg, having to sit out there waiting for us. So if you'd like to pass out anything, I know you know most of our board members, but we have a few new ones, so I'm going to have Gabe start. I'm going to start on the right side, since I've always been left dominant. go this way.
Deborah Allen, trustee.
Trustee Watts, trustee.
Jerry Tellis, trustee.
Maria Teresa, trustee.
Marilyn Latham, CEO.
John Phillips, trustee.
Terry Buck, trustee.
Jerry Holcomb, trustee.
Great.
Delia?
Oh, Delia Rojas, Managing Director for Invesco, Western United States coverage for Invesco.
Hi, Jay Hurley, Portfolio Manager of Invesco for our series of value-added funds.
And Max Wongo, I'm a partner with Invesco Real Estate.
So Max, go for it. It's your floor. You tell us.
Rappy, you get back on time. So we can start.
Didn't you mention something about this last time you were here, like a month ago?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Well, trust me, you have your 40 minutes.
Back on it.
You don't want them. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
No, he doesn't.
This is an updated version of what's in your book, because what is in your book...
I see.
They started in both
this
ends.
Includes the first quarter of this year.
in your book is a version that assumed, that anticipated a potential $60 million allocation of Fund 3, which was in meeting notes that were on your website. And we've revised this down to a $35 million assumption, which is, I think, what is being recommended by staff, so that you now have both. But the more current one is the one that we just handed out. And basically, we're going to start by just showing the cash flow analysis of Fund 1, Fund 2, and a potential allocation of Fund 3. And the first page shows quarter by quarter for this year. And what we've tried to do is highlight the fact that you are seeing significant distributions. You did in the first quarter. You did again in the second quarter. We'll continue in the third quarter.
Could Will get one of these?
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll get him.
Thank you, Terry. So that the distributions from funds 1 and fund 2 would more than cover any contributions from fund 3. That's basically what's highlighted on the first page. If you turn to the second page, importantly, if you look at the bottom of the page, this assumes again so you have the actual numbers from Fund 1, the actual numbers from Fund 2, plus anticipated going forward, a potential allocation of Fund 3. And at the very bottom of the page, it shows what your exposure to Invesco Real Estate's series of closed-end funds 1, 2, and 3 would total if, assuming you make that commitment to Fund 3. So at the end of 2013, you had a $92.8 million exposure through Funds 1 and 2. Our best estimate is that you'll have a $59.9 million full exposure to funds 1, 2, and 3 if you make a $35 million commitment at the end of this year, which will be declining at the end of 2014 to 32.8 and so on. So this is just designed to give you a sense for what the exposure to the full series would be based on contributions and distributions.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions about that?
I think we're all on board there.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor.
And we can certainly entertain any questions going forward. So with that, let me turn it over to Jay. We're going to skip, obviously, you know Invesco, that's tab 1.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to answer questions, which we can do, but I'll skip it because you guys know us very well. We have updated you guys relentlessly on Funds 1 and Fund 2. You've been very patient with us. So we've been advised to go ahead and skip that, but it's in tab 2, and again, we can answer any questions if you'd like us to, and get right to the most important part, which is an update on Fund 3, which is in tab 3, and I'll turn it over to Jay to do that.
Great. Thanks. We'll keep this moving pretty quickly. Just to give you an update on where we are in the fund itself, we're targeting a fund size of somewhere between $350 to $400 million. 305 of that target is either closed or is in documentation at the moment. The probably most interesting point related to this chart is because this fund will have a final close, hard close as of June 30, so we're bumping up toward the end of the fundraising efforts on this fund. It allows you to see a very substantial amount of the asset base that's already owned in the fund. So $162 million of assets have been committed in this fund. We'll kind of give you a quick snapshot of they represent six investments. An additional two are in due diligence right now. We're going through that process. We control those. That would be another $62 million of investments. So to the extent those are made also, and you all come into the fund at the levels that are potentially contemplated for your exposure here, what you would be looking at is a fund in which two-thirds is already pre-specified and is fully visible to you from an asset perspective. We think that's obviously something that's fairly attractive. You get a sense of sort of what you would be investing in as opposed to a blind pool concept. So let's move on to the next page, which starts to give a little bit of data on the first six that are already owned in the fund at a high level.
Can you tell me which page you're on?
I'm in tab 3.
Tab 3.
Page 13.
Thank you. Yes. Jay, we are recording this, and I think you're right on a microphone.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, thank you.
So, as I said, six investments in the fund right now. Two more we're in due diligence with. The six that we own, the statistics are shown here of those in the aggregate. They're projecting to about a 17% return in the aggregate. From a multiple perspective, that'd be about a 175 multiple. Probably most important from my view, from a risk perspective, and we'll talk about this on an individual asset basis, a lot of the risk in these assets is fairly front-ended in terms of evaluated fund. You're trying to best estimate what rents will be. You're trying to best estimate what your execution will really be. A lot of that effort on the first six investments is in our rearview mirror, and we'll talk about some of that specifically. So from a risk posture as well as return, we think the portfolio is fairly attractive from an entry point, from your point of view. Debt obviously is very good. We're being very mindful of sort of that right balance between accretive debt, but also not putting the assets at risk from an over-leveraged perspective, so 58% debt in the aggregate. If you flip now to the next, what will be the next three pages, and I'll try to move through this fairly quickly, which is hard for me because I like to talk about real estate. These are the six investments that you would step into a position in. You would also, important to know, you would step in at a cost basis in these assets as opposed to current market value, which is an excessive cost. So the first is a development in Washington, D.C. This is a rendering at the top of the page here. It's a 300,000 square foot office building in Arlington, Virginia. Very good location in Washington, D.C. The points that are most important to know about this is development really is a strategy that once you are out of the foundation work and up into the development of the frame itself, that's really the risk from a cost overrun perspective. And so where we are today in that relationship is we're eight stories in the air. So the cost overrun risk is largely behind us. We started this investment at a 60% pre-lease. We're now 70% pre-leased as we speak. We'll finish this building from a construction point of view in the first quarter of next year, and it's possible it could be fully leased once it's delivered. That's really unheard of in our space. You really don't get to stabilization that early in a development. So this is a large investment. It has a lot of weight.
Real quickly, yes. Anchor tenant, or is this
yeah,
pretty much?
Anchor tenant is 60% of the building.
And can you tell us who the
group called
tenant?
CNA, Center for Naval Analysis.
Oh, so it's covered.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Sam.
15-year lease.
They've had a contract with the U.S. Navy for 60 years, going back to World War II.
It's Chinese.
So. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
it's a pseudonym for...
yeah, you can imagine the high security that had to go into this building. We actually have special parking for the
Chinese. Imagine how well it's going to work, too.
It'll work. The joint chiefs of staff have special security parking in this building. It's going to be a pretty special place.
Yeah, it's one that we're real excited about. It's 20% of the fund, so it needs to go well. And along that line of thinking, it stabilized. We project it will stabilize at a yield of which would be 40% in excess of where yields trade today when we sell it. So a lot of headroom in this deal, a lot of the risk behind us. Important deal to the fund. The next is in your backyard. It's an office building in San Francisco, 731 Market. So it's at Market between 3rd and 4th.
You just walked right past it recently.
We It's a 100,000 square foot building, very simple premise. The premise is we bought a building that's 100% leased, in which the rents were about 30 to 40% below market. And so as leases roll, naturally, you're able to catch the value creation by moving those rents to market. And so, again, from a risk posture point of view, we've been in this investment a year. Two-thirds of this building has been rolled to market. So, again, a lot of value creation has been accomplished so far. It'll take us about another year to roll the remaining third of the building, and we'll be out in 14. So very attractive return point of view in the mid-20s, significantly above where we typically see value-add returns, but again, largely a function of San Francisco being probably the strongest market in the country for rent growth. So executing well, a lot of the leverage, or a lot of the risk behind us on this one as well. The next two are moving across to New York City. The first is a interesting retail opportunity in what's called the Meatpacking District of Manhattan. So if you look at the picture, we are the larger building in the background. And more specifically, we own the retail condominium interest in this building, which is represented by the ground floor, basement, and second floor. That totals 25,000 feet, 100% leased. Very similar execution to Market Street in that rents are below market. We want to move them to a market level to create value, although the dynamic here is much more significant. Market rents are four times higher than the in-place rents. The trick here is we don't have natural lease rollover early like we did in the San Francisco building. These leases roll 5 and 6 years out, and so the play is to go to these tenants, which we've been doing for the 9 months we've owned this building, to negotiate, in one case, to downsize them by two-thirds, freeing up the two-thirds to release in the market. And the second tenant, we're just going to write them a check to leave because there's such a differential in value creation to lease it to a new tenant. So that negotiation process is underway on both tenants, likely to be accomplished by the end of the year. And then we'll probably enjoy the reset cash flow for a year or two, just given how strong the market for New York City retail is before we sell this asset. So the premise, again, has only gotten stronger in the 9 months that we've owned it, and the execution is well on track.
Have you had to put much improvements in that building as you roll?
We have not. The great thing about New York City retail is the tenants write the check. Very unique to and that's just a function of leverage of landlords.
When they improve, they write the check.
Yes.
It's negotiated.
It's a negotiation, but the leverage is typically with the landlord.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's just not a lot of the space available, the sort of high street retail concept. The next is a 1920s vintage apartment property on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, more specifically at 86th Street and Park Avenue. 46 units. What we loved about this, so it's full, it's 100% leased. What we loved about this opportunity is all of the 46 units are either 3 or 4 bedroom units, which is very rare. It's hard to find on the Upper East Side larger family style units. You typically see a lot of efficiencies in one bedroom, smaller unit types. So there's huge demand for this type of unit, given its scarcity. The added wrinkle on top of that is literally this building built in the 20s. If you walked it, it hasn't been renovated since the 20s. And so our opportunity is to come in here, spend dollars, take this to a Class A modern apartment standard in New York. And as you see in the chart here, we think that will result in about a 2x improvement in rents from where they are today.
For me, that registers galvanized pipes to copper, that galvanized knob and tube to coaxial wire and whatever. You've got to change all that out.
We have an engineering group that spent a lot of time on all of the MEP on this building to make sure that we were able to do what we needed to do, and we have significant dollars to do it.
And the sprinkler system has to go into
it. Yeah, you have to put a sprinkler system in as well. That's right. Yeah, it's obviously not sprinkler. So there's a huge amount. It's a great point here. There's a ton of dollars in this execution for all the MEP side. So if you fast forward, we have now renovated the first handful of units. Rents are being achieved at this 2x level to where the in-place rents are, so we're validating the rent level. This was the lowest projected return at 13%, and it was because there were two upsides that we didn't want to underwrite at the time, but now as you fast forward and 6 months into this investment are likely to occur, and that is we can add by structure and by landmarks approval by the city a penthouse on the roof, which is highly accretive. And while we haven't done it yet, we think the likely exit here is a partial condominium sale where you would sell units to individual owners for probably two-thirds and one-third would still be rental. And there's significant upside to that execution, which will probably be what we do. Okay, the next page and the last two investments made in the fund, which have been made early this year. The first is an apartment property in the Inland Empire called Vineyards at Old Town. This, from our point of view, is sort of a classic opportunity to exploit the inefficiency of the private asset class that we operate in. And what I mean by that is, historically, institutional capital has had very large ownership of multifamily in the Inland Empire.
Where is Inland Empire? I don't know where that is.
Southern California, I'm sorry. So Riverside County.
Riverside County.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's predominantly Riverside County. This is a little bit further south, working toward northern San Diego. It's on the southern edge of what's delineated as Inland Empire. Mm.
This is Temecula. You know
Temecula. Yeah, the town is Temecula. Oh, all right. So what we loved about this opportunity was capital really wasn't coming back, coming out of the financial crisis into the Inland Empire. It was more urban infill, L.A., and not as much focused on this area. So we thought we were able to make a good buy, coupled with the fact that our research group has the Inland Empire as one of its top markets from an outlook perspective for forward total return going forward over the next 3 years. So we thought it was a classic opportunity to come in and buy where capital was not back in where it had historically been. Again, we've been in this 3 months. Rents are up pretty substantially since our purchase. We bought the best asset in the market. So if you're going to make that play, you want to make it on the best asset in the market. So that's what we've done here. And again, this is a fairly low risk execution. We're buying a stabilized top of the market asset. We'll ride the fundamental growth, and then as capital makes its way back into this market where it has historically been, we'll take advantage of selling that. And it's probably a 2 to 3 year hold on that. And then lastly, a repeat in San Francisco, a little better micro location on a building called 116 New Montgomery. New Montgomery and Mission is the cross street here. Very good location. Again, we're doing the exact same thing we're doing on 731 Market, which is buying a building where rents are 30%, 40% below market, leases roll naturally, and you re-tenant. The good thing here is we'll sell the first building in 2014. The execution here will probably take us through 15, so we'll be able to continue our exposure in this strategy that we like, even though we'll sell the first building. And then, as I mentioned, two others in due diligence, likely to close probably right after the closing of the fund, June 30. Those will probably be asset closings in July.
And curiosity as to where, just the cities where they are.
Sure.
The two. Oh, I'm sorry. One is in Brooklyn, right on the East River, between the two bridges.
Yes.
And the other is in downtown Houston, an apartment development in downtown Houston.
Okay. continuing into tab four quickly is just to get you all updated on what Invesco's value added track record looks like. Page 18 is the summary of all of our cumulative value added track record, which goes back 20 years to more than 20 years to 1992, investing in the four major property types with a total since inception IRR on properties that have round tripped that have sold of 18.4%. And a total IRR of 14% on everything, including properties that we still own that are still in the value-added process. And that's at a time when the core index did 8.6% had an 8.6% total return. So more than a 500 basis point premium over core in our 20-year history. And then on page 19, we've broken that down by structure. So we've done that through separate accounts, which you can see through Fund 1, Fund 2, and now Fund 3. Fund 1, 2005 vintage fund with an IRR expectation of 2.5% through the global financial crisis. Fund 2, a 2007 vintage year fund with an IRR expectation of 8% again through the global financial crisis. And then Fund 3, a 2012 vintage fund where we would expect to see an IRR in the mid-teens. So it's just natural for those of us that live in the private equity, private real estate world. Returns are very much driven by vintage year. So to see a 2005 vintage year with a positive return, we'd get all of our clients' capital back to them, plus a positive return without losing money through the global financial crisis feels good. 2007 vintage fund, almost a double-digit return, high single double-digit return, and now 2012 vintage fund should do very well. Okay. And then page 20, what we've shown here is all of the investments, all the value-added investments that we've made post-global financial crisis, and you can see just as you would hope, as you would expect,
very strong performance in the 20% IRR range and almost, 1.8 times multiple. That's exactly what you expect is from a cyclical investment like real estate is. Okay, so good success post-GFC, which we see continuing. Tab 5, last tab we'll wrap up, gives a summary of key terms for Fund 3. There are a few differences from Fund 1 and Fund 2. They're all to the benefit of investors. There are things like a shorter investment period. So the investment period went from 3 years to 2 years. Investors, the feedback we were getting was that investors felt like 3 years was too long. It's 2 years from final closing. So we have a year and a half left on the investment period with the idea that we think we're in a good vintage year, so let's get the capital invested relatively quickly. We also changed the extension periods. Fund 1 and Fund 2 had 3 extension periods at our discretion, which we have utilized in Fund 1. Fund 3, it's now controlled by the LPs. So there's only 2 extension periods instead of 3, and it requires a majority approval by the LPs. Okay. We put a key man provision in Fund 3 that did not exist in Funds 1 and Fund 2. We lowered the leverage limit. The leverage limit was 65%. We brought it down to 60%. Jay, anything I'm missing?
Those are the highlights.
Yeah, that's the majority of it.
Yeah, all LP feedback driving those.
The Invesco capital commitment remains the same, $10 million in Funds 1, 2, and 3. We have just now started to collect capital commitments from staff, so it'll be $10 million from Invesco plus a certain amount from key professionals. And I know that all of us are pretty excited.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Jay and our partners are pretty excited about putting money into this fund, so we'll have personal
money.
So
as was mentioned earlier, your kids' college fund will probably be taken care of by the end of this fund.
That would be nice. That would be nice. I don't think it will, but...
Okay.
Yes, we will be writing checks. We get capital calls when you get capital calls, and and I'll tell you what, those distributions, we get distributions when you get distributions. Mm-hmm. And those distributions have been very nice. And so...
And the fees get cut in half if the extensions come to fruition as well. So... The full fee.
The fee on invested capital, that's true. If you all vote to give it, to extend the fund... Did we go to half? Is that what we decided to do?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We would cut the fee on invested dollars in
half.
Thank
you, Delia.
Yeah, with the theory being... Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Delia.
With the theory being that you're signing up for a 7-year fund, you're not signing up for a 9-year fund, and if we have to extend, you should pay lower fees. We should not be incented to try to extend the fund.
Right.
We should be incented to do what we said we were going to do and liquidate the fund. So...
So question on page 22, it says targeted fund size is 500.
Yes, that was the original target, and that's what is in the PPM. It has been a very difficult fundraising environment.
Okay.
So I think that, as Jay said, we're at 305 today. Depending on what you all do, we'll be above that. There's another 2 or 3 investors who are still kicking around. I'm not sure if they'll show up in June or not. And so the fund will be somewhere between whatever you guys decide to do, if anything, and maybe another $50 million, maybe.
Okay.
So there's a timeline on page 23, which also talks about the fee structure, we did change the fee structure from Funds 1 and Fund 2. The overall load is the same. We tried to make it more simple because we had a very complicated fee structure in Funds 1 and 2. We had a 1% acquisition fee on total gross investment. Plus, we had an asset management fee that was 7.5% of net operating income. That was very hard to explain. It was very hard to understand. It was unique to our fund. No other fund in the market has a structure like that. And so we changed it back to make it more market-oriented, which is just a 1.5% fee on invested capital. There's no fee on committed capital. We don't start collecting fees until we invest your money. It's 1.5%. It's very easy to understand. And then there's the incentive fee stayed the same. The incentive fee hasn't changed. You all get, it's portfolio based, you get all your capital back, you get a 10% preferred return, and once you've got all of that, then we have the opportunity to collect an incentive fee that is 20% above a 10 with a 50% catch-up, 50-50 catch-up.
So I think it's a market oriented, it's a market fee. I think our hurdle is high mm-hmm. relative to market at 10%, but that's okay.
Any other questions? Any last comments you want to make before we move?
Your joint venture partner in 116 New Montgomery, is it Gerald Hines? Is that
Dallas? Gerald Hines.
Of Dallas.
Yeah, they've got a Houston. Big San Francisco office, though. All right, yes, based in Houston.
Headquartered in Houston.
Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a great partner. We actually just bought their headquarters building in our core fund mm-hmm. just recently. So I'm sorry to have this wasn't in the book, and I'll make sure everybody gets one of these. This is a summary of if you commit 35 million, you guys are seeing this.
If we commit 10% of what you're raising the fund, okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. If you commit. $35 million.
Sorry. Okay, we'll go over here. I got it.
We make $3 million.
We would call. it would take.
Good, man.
The way private equity funds work is you have to pay the preferred return to the existing investors for what they've already funded. That's the negative. The positive is you get in at cost. So you own the portfolio at what we paid. Mm-hmm. And the great news is we've been buying this portfolio for more than a year now. So the properties that we have purchased are worth more than what we paid for them. They're worth more than your basis in the property. So you would presumably, if you wanted to have $35 million of exposure, you would commit $36.1 million to get that $35 million. We would immediately call $15.4 million, 43% of your commitment. And that $15.4 million would be worth $18.5 million or an immediate 20% appreciation based on the value of the existing
portfolio.
That's nice.
Portfolio. I'll take it.
And those numbers are
flexible. The 36.1 is 35 plus interest? Correct.
You have to pay the 10% preferred return to the existing investors for the capital that they've already funded.
When did they fund it? Longer?
It's been through several capital calls beginning a year ago.
Yeah.
So there's a small amount called in May of last year. Was the first?
Yes.
Was the first capital
yes.
call?
And then there have been two capital calls, May and November of last year. So it's the actual duration that those dollars were out.
We've tried to minimize mm-hmm. yeah. that amount so that it didn't right. penalize right. people like
that. How many previous investors are in this Fund 3 that were in 1 and 2?
Oh, goodness. I don't know the number off the top of my head.
Two. There's four existing investors today, uh-huh. one in documentation. We're talking to you all on his backside, a few others. And of those, two are repeat from your investments in prior funds.
All right.
Do the original investors want to get a 10% return? They're happy with that?
Yeah, the
ones that are in now.
No.
Yeah, well, that's the documents. That's how these are structured. That's how these funds are structured to keep things very simple and fair. Everyone knows that going in.
Yeah. That's how their trade-off was they didn't have a specified portfolio when they came in. They just had an idea in our mind, and so that's the difference that investors will value earlier as to when they come in these funds. Okay.
Mm-hmm. They got their capital called earlier. Their capital's been at work longer.
Okay. Well, thank you. I know you know a lot of our board members. We want to take a minute to just shake our hands before we go
sure.
out.
Sure.
You're more than welcome to do that. And then we're just going to move on to
thanks,
our
Max,
next,
for zipping through that.
Thank you.
We had a long day.
We're practically back on stage.